Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Maroon Friday edition of The Yard. Hope you're well tonight. I'm recording this up pretty much late. You know, I got to confess, I'm doing some of this during the day on Thursday, and then, we'll finish up tonight. So you kind of got an idea of where things stand as we get into Friday. But no matter when you're listening to this, I hope it's a payday for you and for you biweekly and weekly wage earners. Maybe today is it. Get out, have a chance to go have a little fun. I'm going to be in Nashville, the reason for the early show. Got to get on the road, and it's just 4 hours up there. But all things considered, I like to get up there and get settled. Huge, huge baseball series with Mississippi State and Vanderbilt. Got a lot to talk about this Vanderbilt team, about this matchup, about the pitching rotations that have been announced for both clubs. I think we got a chance to go up there and get it. I really do. I think we got a chance. If we can get a split Friday, Saturday, I think we can get the win on Sunday. And I'm going to speak more extensively about that when we do our Vandy preview at the first segment of the show. But, big weekend on tap for the Bulldogs. They packed the bus this morning, hit the road, and I will hit the road. I guess that was Thursday. I hit the road. I'll probably be on the road when you're listening to this. Just so you know, I'm going to get up and get moving. And I love Nashville. I do. And for those of you coming out, we encourage you to come out and support the Bulldogs. Road baseball is amazing. And for many of you, when the Bulldogs come to your town, it's the only time you get a chance to see them. So we encourage you to get out and come be a part of this, for sure. Last time we went up there, we left a little meat on the bone. We had a chance to take that Sunday game. If you recall, we jumped up 4-0 in that game. And then we ended up losing it because we didn't score the final seven innings of the game. Give Maldonado a lot of credit. He shoved. We couldn't touch him. The variety of sliders just absolutely carved us up. It's a different day and time. It's a different team in maroon and white and a different team in black and gold. We're going to break that down, get you very acquainted with Vanderbilt. We'd like to thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company. I love Bulldog Burger Company. And as I've told you guys before, I was a fan of Bulldog Burger Company long before they were a fan of mine. Before we were even advertisers, I went there frequently to eat. I enjoyed it. So when they reached out and said, hey, we'd like to advertise on the show, I said, man, this is perfect. I love Bulldog Burger Company. I'd love to be able to work with them. And so here we are, all these years later. I believe we've helped build a little brand awareness too. I really do. And, man, there's three great locations to serve you. University Drive here in Star Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, and then Lake Harbor Drive in the Rich and Flowood area. We did get some Bulldog Burger Company this week, and I got the salad. I did. So people tell me, Steve, you're looking really thin these days. Well, Dana's not feeding me. No, really, I'm trying to eat a little bit better, but also, too, I just don't gorge myself these days very often. And got the grilled chicken salad. I did for dinner. And so I love it because the portions are so substantial. I get full. I do. I really do. And I encourage you, if you're a person that is seeking, let's say, a full belly, let's say, you know what, hey, I'm hungry, Steve. I need to get nourishment. I need to enjoy my meal at an affordable price with an incredible atmosphere and exemplary service. Look no further than Bulldog Burger Company. You're hungry. They can solve that problem. And then you'll leave and feel even better about your day. How about that? Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. We all need more of that. It's on the menu, for crying out loud. And that's no accident. right? I love it though. I do. And I enjoy getting that chocolate shake to go. Nutella is probably my go-to. I like that Nutella shake, but I do, you know, when they have those specials, I always kind of have a tendency to kind of, you know, move in that direction just because of the fact that I don't know how often I'm going to have the opportunity to enjoy that special shake. But the reason you go there for those great burgers, if you're a newbie, get the Bulldog. Just a great straight-ahead rock and roll American hamburger. And then maybe the next time, maybe venture out on the wild side a little bit. Maybe get the Smokehouse or the Mission. I get the Pico de Gallo on the side. You know, I'm not a big onion guy. Maybe you are. I don't know. But no matter what you're craving, Bulldog Burger Company can scratch that itch for you. Be sure and check them out today. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay. Let's take our extensive look at Vanderbilt. And we're going to take as much time as we need to go over this. We'll do a top 10 list. We've got a few other things to talk about. And we'll get on out of here. We'll get you on with your day. Many of you will be excited that you've got the Boneyard waiting for you on Friday morning. But they open up the year with a series win over FAU. The Owls, kind of a decent mid-major, I guess. And they lose that middle game 5-4. The other two games, a lot of runs scored for Vanderbilt, but pitching-wise, maybe not what you'd expect. They win game one 12-11, then lose 5-4, and then they bounce back and win 11-1 on Sunday. But it was a series you looked at and said, you know what? It probably shouldn't have been that competitive. If Vanderbilt is as good as they're hyped to be, they probably should have handled those boys. Well, they get into the midweek, and what do you know? They lose to Dayton. The Flyers go into the Hawk and take an 8-5 decision. Then you look up, and Eastern Kentucky gives Vanderbilt all they want and then some, but Vandy finds a way to win 5-3. You say, well, maybe Vanderbilt is not as good as we expected them to be. Well, they get Gonzaga in there, and Gonzaga, you know, as far as Western teams go, they're a really solid team. They really are. Most years. They 10-run roll Gonzaga, and then they bounce back the next day, and they take a 4-3 win. But again, you know, the Vanderbilt offense has been so Jekyll and Hyde, you never know what to expect. They get into Sunday, and what do you know? They lose the Sunday game, 9-8. Well, then they get a little bit angry, have a midweek game against Indiana State. The poor Sycamores never had a chance in this ballgame. 20-4 in favor of Vanderbilt. The game goes to 7 innings. And then our friends from Evansville, they creep in there for a Wednesday night game. You know, we took the series from Evansville, swept that series, and they go to Nashville, make a game of it. The Commodores win 7-3. Vanderbilt then heads down to Houston for the Astros Foundation College Classic. I don't know if they had any trash cans available for them to beat on. I think Vanderbilt, in many respects, is a lot like Houston, but all that understood. They play the Louisiana Raging Cajuns first, get those guys 7-4. They take down Houston, who gave Texas A&M a lot of trouble earlier this week, 3-1. And then they beat number 15 Texas, 14-11. Now, you may recall, a lot of people beginning this year were making the declaration that Texas was back. That was all we heard. Texas is back. Steve, Texas is going to be great. That's a huge win, beating Texas. Well, is it really? I'm asking you, have you kept up? Because if you haven't, I'm going to inform you that right now Texas is 25-17. 11-7 in their conference. 25-17. Let me say this. Texas is not back. They are not back. And so the bloom is kind of off that rose a little bit. But at the time, it appeared to be a good win. Eastern Michigan, the Fighting Scott Weatherbys roll into Nashville and get beat 6-2. But again, you look at that and say, you know what? What is wrong with this offense? I mean, it's like you go out there and put up 14 against Texas, and then you're hitting midweek pitching from Eastern Michigan. You get 6 runs. Yeah, I know. Illinois State comes in for the weekend. They sweep that series, 14-9, 7-2, and 4-0. But again, even on a Sunday game, just not a ton of runs scored. They get Indiana, midweek game, take care of them 13-5. And then we get an SEC play. And Auburn at the time was ranked 18th in the country. Now that seems like forever a day ago now. Auburn, as you know, dead last in the Southeastern Conference, but they were 18th in the country when they went to Nashville. And we're thinking maybe Auburn can go up there and get a split. They don't. Vandy kind of handles business. They mercy rule Auburn on Friday 11-1. Come back on Saturday, get them 13-5. And then Sunday, competitive game, but Vandy gets them 9-6. So the hole that was already dug for Auburn began in Nashville. Then you get into the midweek, and they win 3-1 against Belmont. You're thinking, the Belmont Bruins went up there and held Vanderbilt to 3 runs? Interesting. Well, then they hit the road to go to South Carolina, a team that is kind of similarly situated with Mississippi State right now. They're ranked, we're not. If you look at the numbers, we're basically the same team. They go to South Carolina. They get beat 8-4, 8-3, and 10-2. They get swept on the road. So you had the big sweep of Auburn. You're feeling great. Hey, we're going to contend for an SEC championship this year. And then immediately you're 500 because you go play a middle-of-the-pack SEC team. Yes, it's on the road, but you got to think if your pitching is great as you expect it to be, you ought to be able to take at least one. They get Valpo. We had them a couple years ago in non-conference play. Valpo goes in there and nearly pulls it off. Vandy wins 3-2. But would you expect a pitching duel between Vanderbilt and Valpo on a Tuesday? Maybe you see things differently than me. I think there's some flaws with this team. Well, then they go to Missouri. Excuse me, they host Missouri. And at the time, we all thought, well, Missouri's just a big joke. Well, Vandy sweeps them. But these games really lacked offense. It's 3-1, 4-0, 3-1. So you score 10 runs on the weekend, and you're able to get a sweep. And maybe that says more about Missouri than it does Vanderbilt. They head down to LSU. Now, this at the time, really got our attention. And, of course, LSU right now tied for last place in a projected Hoover Field. They were 18th at the time. What is it about number 18 and Vanderbilt? So Vandy goes down there. They get beat on the first game of the series 10-6. They bounce back game two and win 8-6. You're thinking, well, this sets up for a pretty wild game three. Well, it did, because Vandy 10-run rules LSU down in Baton Rouge 13-3. And at the time, again, it seemed like a really big deal. In hindsight, it really wasn't a big deal. They get Middle Tennessee State in a midweek game. They do those guys pretty well, 14-1. You're thinking, okay, all right. Maybe now Vanderbilt's kind of got the offense rolling a little bit. So they head to College Station, Texas. And they get absolutely embarrassed. First game of that series, 15-0 in favor of A&M. The game goes just 7 innings. Bounce back game two. It's a 9-0 shutout. So two back-to-back shutouts on the road at A&M. And then they lose on game three, 12-6. So you score 6 runs on the weekend, and you don't get a single win. So again, at this point, people are like, you know what, this Texas A&M team is for real. And I admit it, they are better than I expected them to be. But they beat up on Vanderbilt. They absolutely beat up on Vanderbilt. Then they travel to Lipscomb, just across town there, and they handle that game 15-4, right? We've had Lipscomb before, too. And many people expected Lipscomb to win the Atlantic Sun this year. Well, then they host Florida last week, and this is where we get to some controversial stuff. And we're going to talk about this extensively before we get into the numbers and the lineups and things like that. So Vandy takes care of Florida, and again, that's a series that we still feel like we should have had. We're going to feel that way the entire year. But Vandy gets Florida 10-5 on Thursday. They come back on Friday, take 5-2, go into Sunday looking for the sweep. And what's interesting is in the fourth inning, we had some controversy. I mean, some real controversy. I don't mean a bad call or somebody got their feelings hurt or, you know, somebody, you know, text in that you weren't wearing your mask. I mean, it wasn't that. It wasn't that at all. So J.D. Thompson was pitching for Vanderbilt. It's a 2-1 game in favor of Vanderbilt. Florida has gotten a couple doubles. They had a ground rule double, and they had a ball hitting the gap. And then they get to a full count. And all of a sudden, there is some disturbance. And I went back and watched this on demand because I wanted to speak about it intelligently and not just go off media reports. I wanted to see it for myself. So Sully, who has never been one to hold his tongue, starts chirping at the home plate umpire. And the home plate umpire walks over, and I can't really make out everything that he's saying because, you know, Kevin's basically yelling. Well, in the middle of all this, which tells me that the first and second base umpire kind of heard what's going on, they go and kind of secure the crime scene. They go out to the mound, and they're talking to Thompson, and he makes a comment. They point to his arm, and he points to the rosin bag. Well, guys, let me tell you, the rosin bag does not put ointment on your arm. And so they go back and show the replay, and he goes to the right forearm with his pitching hand, and he vigorously rubs. It wasn't like he just touched himself. Or, you know, he goes up there and is basically rubbing something off of his right arm. And then it appears that he wipes, but then when you see the center field camera angle, you realize he didn't wipe. He just kind of tugged at his jersey back there to make it look like he wiped. And Sullivan caught it. They go out. Next thing you know, they make the call to the SEC office. He's gone. And with that ejection, an in-game ejection for a pitcher, 4 games. And so because of the fact that I love all of you and because I'm so dadgum nosy, I made some calls. Found out that he wasn't in the dugout last night or Tuesday night when they played Tennessee Martin, a game they had to walk off in the ninth, so he wasn't in uniform. Get confirmation this morning that, yes, he is suspended. Tim Corbin said in postgame, they asked him about, hey, did you get any updates, coach? Because after Saturday's game, he was like, well, I'll make some calls so we can find out. And he wasn't nearly as jovial Tuesday night. And he goes, well, it's in the book. So Thompson not expected to pitch until next week. It's a big deal. Now, he's not the Vanderbilt ace, and I've read some things out there, and again, it just reminds me there's a lot of people that you love Mississippi State College baseball, but maybe you're not exactly fans of the league. You don't kind of keep up. And so Thompson, last Saturday, if I can get it right, was his first SEC start. Now, he has made multiple appearances in SEC games, but as a reliever. And one of the reasons they're in the situation they're in is because Derek Luttrell, I'm going to say Eric Luttrell. I think Eric listens to the show. Former lead singer of Brouhaha of Jackson, Mississippi fame years ago. But Derek Luttrell was one of their regular weekend guys. He has been on the shelf for a month, and he threw basically a rehab inning Tuesday against Tennessee Martin. So Luttrell started on weekends, and then he kind of went away after he got injured. Shoulder issue. Now he's working his way back. And so they're down one weekend starter and a half is basically how I would explain it. Because the other guy, and we'll get to that when we get to our numbers, has had three of those starts. And then he proved to be ineffective, and they lost two of those three games. The one win was over Missouri. So they moved him back to the bullpen, and they put Thompson out there just saying, hey, let's find a guy here. But what's interesting, you'll note, is many of these guys that are on the shelf for them are left-handers. And that's been a real problem for us. And so that's one of those things that kind of lets me know that, you know, maybe we've got a better chance to take this series than I thought. So let's dig into the numbers here. And I want to also say, Vanderbilt, it's okay to upgrade from the PDF format on the stats. It is. It truly is. Maybe you see it differently, but that's not how I see it. I don't think you have to do the old school PDF thing. It's really nice that we can sort and that sort of stuff and go back and forth. Technology is a wonderful thing, gentlemen. It truly is. And so let me jump in here and let's get to our 2024 stats here for Vanderbilt. And, you know, what are they, 30-11? And they're 10-8 in the SEC. One of the things that I've been told, too, is that, you know, there's some people, let's just say, close to SEC baseball that have said that they do not believe this deal with Thompson is isolated. And that'll be interesting to watch. And you got to think, too, that the SEC umpires and officials, now that you've caught a guy doing it, and you felt good enough to it to not only eject them and suspend them, you upheld the suspension. Tells me that the crew will be on alert this weekend for any silliness. And again, if you see the video, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. It is obvious, absolutely obvious, that he is going to the arm and that he's not wiping, which is the rule, right? You see it all the time, like when guys cough, they go down and wipe their hand on their leg to make sure that people know they don't have some type of, substance. So let's see here. Vanderbilt 30-11, 23-4 at home. Away from their ballpark, 3-7, and neutral fields, 4-0. Of course, that trip down to Houston was a big part of that, and 10-8 in the Southeastern Conference. So let's start with the hitters. Matthew Polk leads the Vanderbilt regulars with a 3.39 average. He has started 31 of 32 games. They've played 41, so he was out some. But, 5 dingers, 17 ribbies, on-base percentage of .395. He's also 6 of 6 in stolen bases. Jonathan Vastine, it's a name that we know, 324, second on the team. He's hit 6 home runs. This is not a Vanderbilt team that's maybe had the juice offensively. They don't have that guy in the order. You're like, hey, we've got to pitch around this guy. They don't have a Caglione. They don't have a Charlie Condon. Jaden Davis, 323 hitter. He's got a couple of bombs too, 28 runs batted in. 3-for-3 in stolen bases. Alan Espinal, 317. He's got 6 tanks, which is tied for the team lead with Vastine. 28 ribby for him. Troy Lenav, that's a guy that we've played against before. Has played some out at right field. He's hitting 312. Now he's a regular with them. He's got 4 tanks and 27 ribbies. RJ Austin, 302 hitter. And again, you see these guys are hitting for average. And you start running through the numbers here and you say, hey, it's not one guy carrying the team. They got a lot of guys swinging it pretty well here. 4 tanks for him with 40 ribbies. But as a team, they're hitting .297. They got 45 jacks this year. They've given up 44. And they've hit 45. And so, again, you look at this thing and you're basically 41, 42 games into the season. So they're averaging about a home run per game. Now, our home run numbers aren't what we expect them to be. But considering that the place that they play, it's rather interesting. And I think it's good, too. Like, State goes and plays this Tuesday game at Memphis. And kind of the unwritten thing here, is I don't know if you guys know this, they have the turf infield at Memphis. Did you know that? Yeah, because at Vandy, they have the turf infield, too. So we have a game, basically, to kind of go prepare, play a real game on that turf, and see how the ball responds. I think it's good scheduling. You just heard me say on Wednesday's show, I wish we played this game at all is on. And I still believe that. However, it makes good sense here. Let's go play a game on turf before we have to go play an SEC game on turf. Maybe you hadn't considered that. Davis Diaz, the hero on Tuesday night with that ninth inning jack, he's hitting .276. That was his 5th home run of the year. But again, the home runs are kind of evenly distributed. Again, you got 2 guys with 6 and a couple guys with 5. So you got some guys in there that can swing it a little bit. Now, one of the things that's interesting, too, they are running the bases with a little more regularity this year, too. You got Jacob Humphrey, a guy that's not even a starter for them. You got 10 bags, 10 for 10. As a team, they're 75 of 85. And R.J. Austin and Calvin Hewitt kind of leading the pack there. And, when Enrique Bradfield was there, he was a walking triple, right? Guy's one of the best base stealers, maybe in the modern game of college baseball. Phenomenal center fielder. And a guy that could really run the bases. But they've been very aggressive on the base pass. And opponents have only stolen 20 of 27. So they're doing a good job managing the run game. I think part of that, too, is because they've had so many left-handers. What's interesting, too, they're not going to have as many of those guys available this weekend. But also, Vandy's always pretty good behind the plate. It's kind of call it for what it is. Now, the SEC pitching matchups are out. Bryce Cunningham is going to throw on Friday night for them. We're going to throw Cal Steven. So we're actually throwing our number one against their number two. Their number one is Colter Holton. He's going to go in game two against TBA. Now, a lot of people say, well, hey, why are we doing it this way? Why didn't Gerangelo go on Saturday? Well, it's because of the fact Gerangelo threw last Sunday. So we're kind of keeping him on a full week's rest, keeping him on schedule, basically. That's what that understands. Now, it also works out, too. Gerangelo, our number two, is going to be throwing against whoever's left for Vanderbilt. And so you feel like that would really favor the Bulldogs. So we have our number one going against their number two. We don't know who's going against the number one. And we have our number two going on Sunday. And so I think the way the pitching mayups lay out really favor Mississippi State. Now, we got to get regular Cal. We got to get regular Gerangelo. We got to find a way to go out there and get some runs. But I truly believe if we can manage a split on Friday, Saturday, that we're going to win this series on Sunday with Gerangelo going Sunday. Because basically it's going to be a Johnny Holstaff deal for them. Well, let's get a little deeper into this pitching thing. Now, again, overall numbers, we'll switch to SEC numbers before we get finished up here. Miller Green is a guy that has worked extensively as a reliever. 13 appearances this year. He's 1-2, but a 1.45 ERA, 21 punch-outs and 18.2 innings of work, and opponents are hitting just .215. I'm certain we're going to see him. J.D. Thompson, another guy that's worked a little bit on weekends and in middle relief, suspended. Ryan Ginther, a guy that pitched last week. It's interesting, too, and we'll get to this shortly, but Ginther had to come in. Again, reliever all the way, 13 appearances, no starts, 1-0 on the year with a 2.41 ERA, and averaging just over a punch-out per inning. Brennan Sieber was credited with the win in relief on Tuesday against Tennessee Martin. He's 3-0 with a 2.81 ERA. You may see him this weekend. Maybe you get into Sunday, and maybe it's an all-hands-on-deck type deal. But we may see him. Ethan McIlvain was initially called out of the bullpen to replace J.D. Thompson in a game that he got ejected against Florida. And then McIlvain pulls something in his back. It was apparent when you watch the video. You hate it for the kid. He did not throw on Tuesday, which is kind of bullpen day, right? Didn't throw on Tuesday, and his status for the weekend is in doubt. Another left-hander. Thompson, of course, a left-hander. McIlvain, a left-hander. And Corbin kind of made it seem on Tuesday night like probably won't see him. You know, probably he didn't say that as much, but you could tell on his salty disposition he wasn't real happy about it. Andrew Dakanich, the fourth, is out for the season. He has one start of the year, pitched early in the year. Appeared in five games. He's done for the year with Tommy John. Alex Krasner, 11 appearances for him, all in relief, 4.30 ERA. He's a guy averaging, again, right at a strikeout per inning. Levi Huseman, another guy, all in relief, 1-0, 5.06. Luke Guth, 5.06, 1-1 guy. And then Devin Fittrell. We talked a little bit about him. He was a guy, seven starts on the year, started having the shoulder trouble, and he's been on the shelf for a month now. And so, you know, we've been through this before too, right? I mean, you got to work guys back up and kind of get their velo back up and get some innings built up. So if we do see him this weekend, it's probably in short stints. Now, the guy that we may see on Sunday is Grayson Carter. 11 appearances, four starts. They have moved him back to the bullpen, though, as of late. He pitched in every game against Florida. So 3 days in a row, right? So limited stints in those ball games, but he was starting in place of Fittrell, and then they move him to the bullpen and insert Thompson on Sunday, so they may easily move him back. But he is the guy that, again, 3-1 record, 6 even the ERA. Sam Hlubocki, we've seen him a little bit, and he through four innings on Tuesday. Just around 41 pitches, so we expect him to be able to go this weekend if they need him. But, you know, ERA 8.62, it's not been a good stretch. It was a double-digit ERA before the Tuesday event. Sawyer Hawks, not expected to pitch this week. Five appearances, 2-0, 10.5 ERA. He's had an elbow issue, and so he's just starting to throw again. And so that's important to understand. So you start working through this, you know, yeah, but a lot of guys are going to be unavailable. I say a lot. We're talking a handful here. You know, J.D. Thompson suspended. McIlvain injured. Dakanich out for the year. Devin Fittrell working his way back into good health. And then Sawyer Hawks just starting to throw next week. Now, let's look at our SEC numbers. for this group, and we won't spend nearly as much time on that. But I think it's important to look at, you know, not as many of these guys have pitched in SEC play. And so you start running this thing down here. I mean, you're going to have about a dozen pitchers or so available. And you say, but Steve, you know, it's Vanderbilt. And it is. It is Vanderbilt. They kind of specialize in that. But again, you work as a staff here. It's a 5.07 ERA. And we just talked about Sam Hlubacki. His ERA in SEC play is 13.5. Devin Luttrell, again, just kind of coming back. He got rocked pretty good in that South Carolina game. Two starts on the year, 0-1, 10.12. But again, if he does pitch this weekend, it's going to be very limited. But when you look at the SEC numbers, Carter Holton, 3.44. And he's the dude. He is 36.2 innings pitched. Has given up just 16 runs on 27 hits, 51 punch-outs against 10 walks. So 5-1 ratio there. And then there's Bryce Cunningham, who will go Friday night. What's interesting about Cunningham is he is very susceptible to the long ball. 3-2 record in SEC play, ERA of 6.03, and just in his six SEC starts alone, he's given up 10 home runs. Just calling it as I see it, and he's a right-hander. Holton's a lefty. You start working through this, and you begin to realize the matchup problem is going to be the real issue for them. You're going to have to get deeper in the bullpen to kind of get some things done. And so I think that's the thing you look at, too. So with J.D. Thompson out, McIlvain out, that's another left-hander, and Futrell, I've mispronounced it the whole way through. I apologize to the Futrell family. I had Eric Luttrell in the month. Devin Luttrell, Futrell, maybe I'll get it right now. I'm sorry. Another left-hander. And so when you start thinking about the composition of the entire weekend, it's one of the things I think is so important on Fridays. You've got to kind of get this thing figured out to win the game Friday. But also, too, I want them to be able to burn some arms, right? So you want to be able to chase Cunningham and have them get in the bullpen. Now, if you are the losing team on Friday, you want to know about it as soon as you possibly can. That way you can kind of figure out, do I want to throw guys on the back end and save better arms for the two games that are still in question? Because it doesn't matter how bad you get beat on Friday. It doesn't matter. When you lose, you lose. But you save some big arms for Saturday and Sunday to give you a chance to win those games. And so, I mean, you may just, you know, try to walk on out there and just have the guy mop up for you, just kind of get the game over. But I'd like for it to be a competitive game at least through 6-7 innings, and then maybe us break it open late. You know, I want to win the game, but I also want to win the weekend. Now, Grayson Carter, again, it'll be interesting to see how they utilize him. But this is a guy that really hadn't worked real deep in the ballgames when he has started. You know, Holton's a much different dynamic. I mean, he's given you six consistently, and you know they're probably going to want to stretch him this week. And of course, that's going to be in a Saturday game. But I suspect they're going to want to ride these starters a little longer than usual. Bryce Cunningham averaging just over 5 innings a game. And that's really the struggle when you have guys that leave balls up. You start leaning on Cunningham a little too much, and you go a little bit too long with him, the game could get away from him. So it's a very good situation for Mississippi State. I mean, it truly is. We probably could not have asked for a better situation. We went up there in 21. You know, they had Jack Leiter and Kumar Rocker going. Of course, you know, we beat Leiter for his first college loss. But Kumar got to us. And I remember, you know, Christian McLeod, the first time through that order was absolutely filthy. And then it all just kind of fell apart. But, you know, Bednar went out there and shoved for us too. But this is probably the best chance we've had to go up there and win a series in a while. And in that 21 year, we were the national champions. We lose Friday, win Saturday, and should have won on Sunday. And that's when you start running through these opportunities here. When you think about what's at stake for Mississippi State, you're 10-8 right now. You get the weekend, you're 12-9 with 3 weekends left to play, and you're expected to win probably 2 of those series. But now all of a sudden you start thinking, if we get 2 this weekend, then you begin to think, hey, maybe a winning record in the SEC is doable. Now, I've had this discussion on Gene's page throughout the day today, you know, people arguing against our RPI. Well, you know, we're not going to be able to host because, guys, you just keep winning. You just keep winning. It all takes care of itself. It's not just about us. There's going to be teams ahead of us that lose, that drop. You keep winning. The traffic begins to clear. Can we play ourselves into a hosting destination? We can. I'm not expecting that, though. But if you take two this weekend, then all of a sudden you kind of start thinking about that. You really do. Because of the four weekends we have left, three of our four weekend opponents have an RPI in the top 20. You know, here we are in the high 30s. And so all of a sudden you start picking up wins here and there, and then people around you continue to win, people that you've defeated, like Georgia. You know, wouldn't it be great if Auburn could pick up a win or two for us? You know, we got a boost in our RPI on Tuesday when Georgia beat Clemson. You know, so we just need the right teams to win, and we need the right teams to lose. But more importantly, we just simply need to win games. We have got to continue to push ahead here. This is a golden opportunity for Mississippi State to take an SEC road series. And, of course, road wins factor into the RPI. Vanderbilt is, what, 17 or 19 in the RPI? So you go into their place and you take two of those. That's going to help boost you up significantly. And so I feel good about where we stand. We've got to hit the baseball better. And you know runs are going to be at a premium. That's important to understand. Runs are going to be at a premium. And, guys, I'm only guaranteed 21 outs. And right now people are like, but, Steve, isn't it not? No, I'm only guaranteed 7 innings of play. Right? Because of the mercy rule. I'm only guaranteed 21 outs. I don't think Vanderbilt as a team is capable of 10-run ruling us without our help. You know, so I think, hey, we're probably going to get all these 27 outs in. But I've got to treat every out in this ball game, the first six innings, like they're absolute treasures. When I have a chance to move a runner, I got to do it. When I have a chance to sacrifice a runner in, I got to do it. When I got to push a ground ball to the right side, I got to do it. This is a good Vanderbilt team. They're not an elite team like they have been, but they've been really good at home. It's tough to win on the SEC road. Now, I really thought we'd go into A&M and win that series. And again, A&M has proven to be a much better team than I expected. I think we've got a pretty good handle on Vanderbilt, though. You know, now that we're, you know, six, 7 weekends into this thing. I think you kind of understand who they are. They're not a great offense, but they're a solid offense 1 through 9. You know, it's not one of those duos you look at and say, well, when everything is kind of drops off offensively after the five-hole hitter. They got some guys up and down the order that can swing it pretty good. And again, I mean, they're almost hitting 300 as a team. So they're going to put the ball in play. And again, I think playing that game on Tuesday on the turf makes good sense because it gives your players a chance to kind of read the ball there and see how it's going to react. So it's not a big shock when you go to Vanderbilt. That's important to understand. And I don't know that Chris Simonis will get credit for that because I didn't even consider that until I got ready to break this game down. But you know what? We just played a game on turf. We just did it this week. So plenty of carryover in that respect. And we'll get up there tonight. We'll have our workout on their field and, you know, things will be good. But, you know, we need DJ and we need Hunter to get hot this weekend. We really do. We really do. And I don't just mean average-wise. We need some big shots. We need to get their people out of it. And it's not a raucous atmosphere at Vanderbilt. Sometimes it looks like it on TV. It's not. And I knew that we'll have a nice maroon and white contingent, even though most of you guys will be relegated to the right field bleachers. But please turn out and support the Bulldogs. And I truly believe we got a chance to go in there and take this series. And again, some of their pitching woes. Like, listen, nobody felt sorry for us in the last 2 years. And so, as I mentioned to the Brad earlier, I said, well, this guy's out and this guy's out and this guy's going to be back in a week. And, you know, so it sounds a lot like us 2 years ago. I said, oh, I know. So we have to take advantage of this. We simply have to go out there and play baseball. And granted, Lamonos has had some success up there. But we need to find a way to go get this thing done. Absolutely got to go get it done. At a bare minimum, we got to get one. But, man, we really need and want two. Of course, if we get them all, we'd be thrilled. But that's not going to happen. You know, I mean, just road sweeps just in this league just don't happen. But if you can find a way to get two and get to 12-9, with 3 weekends left to play, it opens up the doors for a lot of things. And, you know, the latest projections have us playing as a 2-seed at Clemson. Perfectly fine with me. But this weekend is one we always talk about how big a deal it is when we go play teams like Vanderbilt. And for years and years and years, it was pretty much a rivalry in some respects. And some of our better teams have gone to Vanderbilt and come home with losses. But I recall us going up there and winning that Super Regional up there. I don't think anybody expected that, and we did it. This is a better team than that team. It absolutely is. It was a young team that went up there and won that Super Regional. This is a veteran team. And I know what we're going to get from Cal Stephens, at least I believe. I know what we can expect from him. And him going against their number two, I think, provides us a chance to get that first one. And again, if we get the first one, I feel really confident about taking the third one, and we'll see what happens on Saturday. But, yeah, I'm picking State to win Friday and Sunday and take the series. All right, time for today's Top 10 List. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R, B-L-A-I-R, Blair. Blair Chandler is a mortgage professional, friends. He's been doing it 23 years. Nobody stays in any industry 20-plus years by accident. The reason Blair has remained in this industry as long as he has and has been as successful as he is because Blair knows how to get things done. Whether you're looking for a game day condo, maybe a first home, I don't know, maybe a second home. I don't know your needs, but I know this. When you have mortgage needs, sometimes it's difficult to know where to turn. I'm giving you Blair Chandler's number right now. 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. Blair's Bulldog, got a place here, season ticket holder in multiple sports. Also a great guy. Been a great friend to me for a long time. He'll be a friend to you too. When it comes time to refinance, maybe get a second mortgage or a game day condo or just buy a house for the first time, don't overcomplicate it. Reach out to Blair at closewithblair.com. Be sure and check out the website today and hit him up. We've had several Boneyard listeners that have closed loans through Blair, and I cannot recommend him enough. My friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry, Blair Chandler. All right, let's take a look here. You know, I knew Motley Crue's out today, and I need to hear it in the car. I've listened to it a few times. It is a little different. It is, of course, it's not going to sound like the 80s, as the Brat always says. You know, it's not going to be Dr. Feelgood Part 2. A lot of bands out there kind of doing that, going back to the classic sound. But with John Five as the guitarist, we have a new Motley single, Dogs of War, dropped late last night, early this morning, depending on your vantage point. It's interesting. I don't hate it. I'm not sure I love it. We'll see. We'll see. And you know me, I'm probably the biggest Motley fan you know. I'm just kind of throwing that out there. But as I was listening to that, you know how you scroll and all of a sudden like the algorithm will pick other things? And I heard an old, obscure, deep cut from Warrant. I said, you know, I think maybe we should do a Warrant Power Ballads list today. And so I'm calling an audible. We're going to do the Warrant Power Ballads. Now, many of you know they had a bunch of hits. You know my connection to Janie Lane. I share that with you just because of the fact that I think there are some bands, in many respects, that are timeless. There are some songs that still hold up years later. And, of course, the Power Ballad was a really big part of things. You know, we lost CJ Snare here recently. Really sad. Really sad. It is. And maybe we do a Firehouse 2.0 list soon in his memory. But as I'm scrolling there, I come across a live version of I Saw Red from Warrant. And you forget how great the song is. And it's even more poignant when you consider that it's a true story. That actually, Janie Lane walked in on his girlfriend who was in bed with a friend of his. Changed his life, caused him to have a nervous breakdown. Actually, delayed the release of their debut album, Dirty Rotten, Filthy Stinking Rich. Now, the song itself is on the Cherry Pie album. But nevertheless, you know, I thought it was important to maybe talk about that a little bit. That it's not just art. you know, it's art imitating life, not the other way around. And, you know, there's a lot of people that write from personal experience, and of course, not everything is some personal experience. You know, I mean, you know, there's so many great songs out there. I mean, you know, people write about things that didn't happen in their life, but perhaps, you know, something that inspires them to pen something beautiful for the rest of us. So, our first song, our number 10 song on today's list of Warrant Power Ballads, comes from the Dog Eat Dog album, of course. Now, that was, music was changing a little bit. Dana and I were dating then. I remember watching, you know, the video for Machine Gun for the very first time on MTV on a little 19-inch television. I was thrilled, though. I was happy. I was broke, but I was happy. But on that album, there's a couple really good ones. And Let It Rain is actually the number 10 song on our list and the 10th track on Dog Eat Dog. Really, really cool song that many of you probably don't know, but certainly worth looking into, for sure. All right, our number 9 song is, it starts, you know, with this great, I don't know, kind of an acoustic riff. There's some cool things about this track. And it does kind of pick up a little bit, so maybe it's not exactly a power ballad in its most sincere definition, maybe. Maybe you see it differently than I do. But it's a song called Sad Teresa. Really, really cool song. And I think it's one of those songs, too, again, that maybe you moved on with your musical taste when these albums dropped. But great track, Sad Teresa. I think you'll dig that one. All right, number 8. This is a cool track, too. I actually heard them play this live the night that I got a chance to talk with Jenny Lane. And it's from the Greatest and Latest album. You're trying to wrap up a record deal so they pump out some fresh content. It's a song called Southern Comfort. And, you know, of course, South Louisiana meant a lot to those guys. You know, Bobby Brown, of course, is from outside of Baton Rouge. But the song is written about kind of South Louisiana, living in the South. Cool song, again, maybe something you don't know. Now, back to the Dog Eat Dog album. I'm wrong there. I'm wrong. That's not correct. It's ultraphobic. But Sad Teresa's on the Dog Eat Dog album. Got to get my notes right here. But a song that Janie Lane said, you know, hey, it took him about a month to write this song. There were a lot of tracks out there that just kind of come out of the ethos, right? And you can write them in like 10, 15 minutes, at least kind of get the bones of it together. But this ultraphobic album was a little bit different. You know, it was like Warrant began to kind of change from the 80s hair metal sound and tried to get a little grungier and kind of change with the times, and it just didn't come off well. You had a lot of people that were longtime Warrant fans that were like, hey, these guys are kind of abandoning us in favor of a new fad. And then people that were in the grunge were like, hey, these guys are pretenders. I mean, these guys are posers. It's not who they are. You know, they're just kind of following the trends. But there is a very poignant song, the last track on the album. It's called Stronger Now. And it again, it's a song that Janie Lane says probably was written above his own skill level, to be honest with you. See, it took a long time for him to put this thing together, but it is a very, 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 very good song. Number 7. All right, number 6 from that same album, Ultraphobic, it's a song called High. And again, probably one that you don't know as well. But in many respects, it's kind of about the euphoria of a new relationship, right? I mean, it's like, it's how it happens. You meet somebody new, you like them, they like you back. You begin to feel better about yourself. Every day feels like a gift. You get up, can't wait to go do something cool with them. And so in many respects, it kind of gets you high. There's this, you know, there's this dopamine rush from being in love, especially when it's brand new. Which I could opine about that for a long time, too. You know, I think that's one of the things that happens in life, too. People get bored. You know, they think, well, I want to feel what it's like to be in love again. You know, and so then they begin to chase a feeling rather than a person. Number 5, though, and the final 5, you're going to know these songs well, because they were huge hits. Now, number 5 probably should have been a bigger hit. I remember we had the Cherry Pie album. I was a Jones. And I remember hearing this song for the first time, and I'm like, this song is absolutely gorgeous. And it is a great sentiment from somebody that loves somebody else. It's a great song called Blind Faith. I got blind faith in you, you know. And that's a difficult thing to do, right? Because even when we first fall in love, we always kind of keep our, kind of keep our guard up a little bit. You know, we don't want to get hurt. It's like, I want to fall too fast and get so excited about this, and then maybe that person's not feeling it the same way we are. And you kind of reach a point where you just let go. It's a great, great feeling. It's like, you know what? I'm just going to fully invest myself in this relationship and this person, and whatever happens is going to happen. To be honest with you, I think it's a better way to go through life. Just let go. Let go, let it happen. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But there's probably a lesser chance of it working out if you continue to kind of keep your guard up and keep people at arm's length and not let people love you. And this is really what that song is about. I got blind faith in you. It's great. And he even talks about it. I don't know how I deserved a woman so true. It's great. It's a beautiful, beautiful song. And I think it's one of Janie's shining moments as a vocalist. All right, number four, a song we've already talked about. It's I Saw Red. And while it is a very beautiful song, it is a very sad song. I didn't even need to see his face. I saw yours. I saw red, and then I closed the door. You know, I don't think I'm going to love you anymore. It's a very, very, very tear-jerking type experience. And I hope and pray that you never have to experience something like that, to have that visualization burned in your mind forever, that every time you think of that person, you remember the worst moment. It's a tough thing. But we have learned in life that if things don't end badly, they typically don't end. And sometimes you're better off just kind of knowing the bitter truth rather than having to live a lie. There's nothing more expensive than that. You know, there really isn't. You know, it's like you live a lie, and you know, you put your best foot forward out on Facebook and Instagram and everything else, and inside you're dying, right? True story. All right, number three, and this was a huge hit off the debut album, Dirty Riding, Filthy Stinking Rich. Absolutely love this track. And again, it's kind of sad too. It's Sometimes She Cries, but you know what? She's alone at night. It's part of life too. It's part of the human experience, right? I mean, none of us ever stay on top forever. It's true. There used to be a time in my life where I said I'd never had a bad day. And the truth of the matter, that was the naivety of youth. I just hadn't lived long enough. There are some really tough days. It's true. And Mama told me there would be days like these, but she didn't tell me there would be this many. It's true. And I think it's important to kind of understand that too. There's a lot of this stuff that gets self-inflicted. But sometimes you can go about your life and you can do everything you're supposed to do. You can maintain integrity in all your relationships and all your business dealings, and you can still be victimized. You can still have something just kind of hit you out of left field that you never expected. And sometimes it's not even, you know, somebody, an act of betrayal. Sometimes it's just a matter of living life on life's terms. I wish, young people, I wish that, you know, once you get out of college and you get married, you get a job, that everything is all hunky-dory. That's just not true. It's just not. It's not a destination. It's just part of the journey. And there are going to be people in life that are going to disappoint you. There are going to be people you love that are going to disappoint you. And you're going to disappoint them too. It's true. And sometimes it won't even be despite your best effort. Sometimes you'll do the best you can and you just maybe aren't quite good enough. That's true too. It's a difficult thing to take. And you go out there and you chase your dreams. You come up a little bit short and you figure like, what's next? But the reality of it is that people are human beings and people make mistakes. And you got to figure out which mistakes you're willing to forgive and forget. In other situations, there are going to be some things that are going to be so incredibly devastating to you that you never get over. It's true. There are some things in life that you never truly get over. You'll put on a brave face and you just kind of move forward with life. But you know as well as I do, you know, maybe you're just two drinks away from crying. Right? It's true. But you just kind of put things in a rearview mirror. But there are some things in life that never truly leave you. And sadly, many times it's the negative memories, right? There are some things you look back and say, you know what, this was a great time in life. Let's do that again. And there are things that happen and you think, I never want to live through anything like that ever again. And so it kind of sits back there, you know, in the recesses of your mind. And I guess when you start feeling sorry for yourself, you can index it right up if you want to. I just kind of choose not to. That's not to say that, you know, some days I have bad days. A couple days ago, I was so incredibly depressed, I just want to go to bed. Got a good night's rest. Spent a little time with the bride, and I was right back up. But, you know, some people have to deal with a lot on their own. I think it's important, whether it be a recovery thing or depression or whatever, it's so important for all of us to remember that we are not alone. That little voice in your head would kind of convince you, you know, hey, nobody's ever felt like this before. This is the end of the world. And I can't count how many times early in life I'd hear that sort of stuff. And then the same stuff's happened again. You know, I mean, things happen. You learn how to deal with it. And it's not just about surviving. It's about overcoming. So I'm done preaching for now. But yeah, sometimes she cries. Kind of got me thinking about that. Because there are going to be sad things in life. None of us are immune from that. None of us are just blessed enough that nothing bad is ever going to happen to us. All right, number two. And I don't know what it is about Janie Lane and these sad love songs. But when I met Janie and we talked about this, at the time, he said he would rather have been known for writing this song than Cherry Pie. When they put the Cherry Pie album together, Uncle Tom's Cabin was supposed to be kind of like the big deal. And I think they were actually going to call the record Uncle Tom's Cabin, which is kind of interesting in hindsight. I think musically, that's one of the best songs Warren ever did. Janie Lane's brother Dave wrote the intro to that on the acoustic guitar. But the Cherry Pie thing, you know, in many respects, it's very cheesy. It is. And a lot of people say the video is just so cringy. We're all a product of our time. 20 years from now, 30 years from now, there'll be people looking back at you, young people, saying, oh my gosh, you guys were so gross. Yeah, it's true. It just happens. Things evolve. People's level of interest change. But the song is Bitter Pill. And it also is from Dog Eat Dog. If you don't know that one, you certainly should. It is an absolutely beautiful song. And I love the harmonies on it. There's an acoustic version out there, and then there's the full band version. It kind of depends on what mood I'm in. I love them both. I wish, if you ever watched that acoustic video, I wish I could find those pants that Janie Lane is wearing. I could pull that off. Maybe you couldn't, but I could pull it off. But number one, and if you've been a fan of Warrant, you probably know where we're going with this. It's heaven. Because heaven isn't too far away. And again, this is about being in love and about everything is great, right? Everything is good. It's great when that's how you feel about your life, right? I'm the kind of person who lives my life that I believe the best is yet to come. I don't believe I've peaked. I think there's still a lot that I can do. There's a lot that I can experience. And I can tell you this, you know, the thing that I have learned about life, and I think it's important too, all about the whole letting go thing. You know, you just let go and kind of go with the flow a little bit, because life has a way of rewarding you too. You know, I remember it's like when we had Ani, of course, we lost our first child to miscarriage, or he was stillborn, and the toughest day of my life, and truly, truly the saddest day of my life. I've had some sad days since then, but that's the one, May 7th, 1994. It still stays with me. And I wrote about that extensively in When the Bottom Falls. And then we had Ani. And I was so in love with that child. I mean, it was nothing mattered more to me than him. Nothing. Nothing. And I think a lot of it's because we had lost our first child that I had all of this built up emotion. And so, and then we lost our second child, our third child, pardon me. And I remember then, praying to God and saying, you know, God, there are so many people out there that don't have any children. They don't have a hand to hold. And their arms just feel so empty. And you have blessed me and Dana with one child. So if we never have another child, I am going to be grateful for what I have been blessed with. That's an important thing to understand. And then I thought, I could never, ever, 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 ever love anybody as much as I loved my child. And then Audrey showed up. And I loved her just as much. And we were thinking we wanted to have a big family. And we do. And again, I thought, oh my gosh, we're going to have a third child. Do I have enough love to cover that one too? And you know what? You do. You can never underestimate the capacity of the heart to love. You really can't. Because, you know, even going back when I first met Dana, I started dating her, and, you know, I was like, I've never loved anybody like this. I don't know if I could ever love anybody more. And then, of course, we build a family, and then we thought we were done. We got Mia home, and I remember she was home for a couple months, and we're thinking, you know what, maybe this is good. Three is plenty. Three is good. And it was a part of me. I always felt like, you know, I wish Donnie had a younger brother to play ball with, you know, play video games with, somebody to impart some knowledge with. And then, lo and behold, one day, I got to take Dana to lunch at the hospital, and she's like, hey, I got something to tell you. And she says, I'm pregnant. And I said, well, what are we going to do? And she said, we're going to have another baby. That's what we're going to do, stupid. And we did. And Ian's the one that's kept me young. Truly, he has. Because I got really old in my 30s. I did. I became just the guy that was, you know, paying for everything, you know. And I lost the ability to dream for myself. And I guess at some point you go through that in life because that's, a phase in life that's important. When you become a parent, I say that really weird. When you become a parent, it's your dreams are secondary. That doesn't mean that they're canceled. You just kind of put them on pause for a little while. And I've reinvented myself a little bit later in life. But I share that with you just because of the fact I think it's important to understand there are people that have not been born yet, that we're all going to love like we never thought possible. That's some really deep stuff. It really is. And so when Ani and Betsy, and we could not have picked a better daughter-in-law, we absolutely love her. Absolutely love her. And so we had Vivi. And again, that whole thing about, you know, the gulf of your emotional resources, thinking, oh my gosh, how could I love a child more? Well, here you know. Loving a grandchild is so incredibly special. It really is. And now we have two grand girls to love. And we get to see them in a couple of weeks. And we head up to Fayetteville to take on Arkansas. But I share that with you because I think it's so important to understand that there are different phases in life that are going to mean different things to you. And if I had just kind of clung on to the old stuff, I would have never enjoyed or experienced the new stuff. I think that's important to understand in life. Is life is ever changing. It's the only constant in life is change. But to embrace the change is wide open, I think, is very, very special. Because listen, there are people back there that'll hold you back. And I've thought about this a lot. I almost wrote some, for those of you that follow me on Facebook, I almost wrote this as part of the randoms, and maybe I will. I've had some time to kind of, you know, marinate on it and meditate on the moment a little bit. But there are a lot of people that are just tourists in our lives. It's true. Now, some people will treat your life like they're a 5-star Airbnb guest, right? They'll even leave it better than they found it. They just don't stay very long. And there are other people that are going to absolutely trash your life. And they're going to come in here and, you know, be like somebody on, you know, on a bachelor party weekend or whatever. Everybody gets drunk and wrecks the house. And then you're left to clean up the pieces. It's true. And there are a lot of people that have come through my life that were just tourists, and I wish they would have stayed longer. It's true. But if I had had my way, then maybe that spot in my life would have been filled by somebody who was only supposed to be in it for a season. I think that's important to always understand. I am grateful to everybody, absolutely everybody, that has shared the path with me for a while, whether it be a few steps, a few miles, or for a lifetime. I am grateful for everybody. Because I've learned something along the way, whether it be what I don't want in life, what I don't want to be, who I want to be, who I want to emulate, who maybe I want to pattern myself after. But you learn a lot from each step on the path. And trust me, there are some people that I've been tourists in their lives too, and they're probably wishing that I would have stayed. It's true. I mean, we're not just an island in and true of ourselves. You know, there are people out there that maybe we didn't treat as well as they had hoped we would. But there's a reason you're not together. There's a reason that things have not come to pass. There's a reason that you have moved on. And listen, there are people I look back in my life and say, you know what, we might have made it if this. Well, it wasn't supposed to happen, you know. And there are other people out there, too, that there are a lot of people, too, that are out there in some bad relationships that were probably supposed to be tourists, and then they ended up being residents. And it might be time to kind of check into, the Tourism Bureau here, right? And kind of get back on the path yourself. There are a lot of people that get distracted. And so, again, I feel like I've spent so much time speaking philosophically today. But we got to get this show over with. But that's your top 10 list. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, please reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samanti, my friend. Saw him and his lovely wife, Missy, on Tuesday as Mississippi State knocked down Memphis in baseball. They were there. They were there. True Maroon. You can find Roy on Twitter or X, whatever you call it these days, at Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. And you can find our great list also on Spotify under that same handle. I'm on all forms of social media, at Scout Steve R. Everything. I just like to keep it simple, right? Listen, no matter what happens the rest of this weekend, maybe you'll take some time listening to some Warrant. Maybe you won't. But let's prioritize the people that we love in life and let them know how much we love them. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkbillian institution. I love Campus Bookmart. You will too if you don't already. Guys, if you are looking for Mississippi State merchandise, look no further than Campus Bookmart. The best selection, whether you're outfitting your house, your car, your office, your RV, your fan cave. Maybe you need that special graduation gift. Grandparents, again, I'm pushing the diploma frames. It's a great grandparents gift. It is. Somebody needs to buy that child a diploma frame. They do. They can hang it up on the wall and rep the Mississippi State brand with a lot of pride. You can be a part of that. How cool is that? You can order them online, have them shipped directly to your graduate. How cool is that? You haven't even thought about that. That's what I'm here for. But you know what? Even when it's not graduation day, there's a lot of great things that you can pick out at Campus Bookmart. And if you can't make it to town to see their lovely and talented faces, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. A lot of Mississippi State baseball gear available, and it won't be long until new football stuff will be coming in, and we'll be ramping up football season. It's crazy to think about that, guys. I mean, we're just over 4 months away. Got a lot of baseball to play between now and then. Got some football camps to cover, things like that. We got a lot to cover between now and then. We'll take a little downtime, too. But, yeah, you need to be thinking about that. You always be thinking about what the next Mississippi State, whether it be a polo shirt or a T-shirt, or decorative item, there's always something you can do and something that you can spend your money on that'll be meaningful to you. Because I can promise you, everybody out there that gets golf shirts, you'd rather have a Mississippi State shirt. It's true. It's true. All right, let's take a quick look back at last night's draft. Of course, we did not expect any Mississippi State players to be drafted in the first round. It's not a surprise. But it was a very, very big day for the SEC, and it always is. It always is. Now, we do think there's a possibility of some movement today on the Mississippi State side of things. And then there may be a couple guys tomorrow. I don't think it's going to be a big draft. I think Buki and DeCam will go on day two and possibly Tulu and Jet on day three. That's how I see it. Jaden Cromedy probably a day three guy as well. So the first SEC pick last night, of course, Jaden Daniels, a guy that I voted to win the Heisman Trophy, goes to the Washington Commanders. Our Neil Stopchinski, that does the stop reports for us, he's a huge Bears fan. He was really jacked about Caleb Williams coming there. I don't know. But it's interesting, you know, the top three quarterbacks, and if people were talking about it's not a great quarterback draft, yeah, I guess we'll see. Malik Nabers, former Mississippi State commitment Malik Nabers, and some people had some fun yesterday retweeting the old Malik Nabers commitment story went back from 2020. And you know what might have been? You know, I mean, the guy was a stud. We knew it. We thought him and Teddy Knox would come in and be the great dudes. And then we lose Malik Nabers on signing day to LSU. And let me just tell you this now. When LSU wants a kid from Louisiana, they're going to get him. I don't care what your sources tell you, right? I've got coming up on 30 years doing this, and I can tell you, when LSU wants a kid, they're going to use whatever resources they need to get him, and that was the case here. And Malik Nabers has made the most of his opportunities at LSU, again, the number six pick in the draft, and the SEC didn't have to wait long. J.C. Latham, offensive tackle from Alabama, goes to the Tennessee Titans there at number 7. Remember, this is the same organization that drafted Will Levis. Interesting. Also drafted Jeffrey Simmons. You know, they can't all be winners. But it's interesting. You know, Latham is a guy, obviously, that had a high grade and among the first offensive linemen taking a second tackle in the draft, for sure. Georgia's Brock Bowers goes to the Raiders. Man, what a great value pick that is. Brock Bowers, arguably the best tight end that we've seen maybe since Kellen Winslow Jr. I think that's probably fair. I think Brock's a guy that'll probably hang in the NFL a lot longer than Winslow Jr. did. If he stays healthy, the kid's ridiculous. He truly is. He fits the new brand of football. Next SEC pick happens at 17, Dallas Turner, an edge from Alabama. And did you see this conversation, too, about Nick Saban? They tried to get a Toledo player to go in the portal, and he never would go in the portal. So basically, they've admitted to tampering. Even though Nick Saban's retired, I guess maybe he doesn't care anymore. But it's interesting to me that Alabama goes after a player and tries to coax him in the portal, and he doesn't, and then ends up being a first-rounder. Interesting. Amarius Mims, offensive tackle from Georgia. He is an absolute path paver. We played against him. We know. He's legit. Probably a guy, provided he stays healthy, going to stay in the league an extremely long time. Brian Thomas Jr., kind of a crazy deal here, a lot of trades here, but Brian Thomas Jr. ends up in Jacksonville, and his mom with a bit of a faux pas last night. They're asking his dad, but he was, oh, it's just so awesome. And they asked the mom, how far has this family come? And it was really about kind of philosophically. And the poor woman, and she's viral now because she didn't understand the question. And she said, oh, we came from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. It's true. And it's cute. I mean, it truly is. But, it's just – you imagine being up there on stage, all these people got microphones in your face, and you're thinking about your child and thinking about the fact that his dream has come true and he's about to be financially set and you don't have to worry about things for a while, and you had a bit of a faux pas. It's okay. I mean, it absolutely is. And no way am I making fun of her. I probably wouldn't have handled it as well as she did. She just misunderstood a question. But anyway, congratulations to Brian Thomas Jr., elevating his stock to be in the first round. Really, 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 really good player. All right, Terrion Arnold from Alabama corner is the number 24 pick to the Detroit Lions. It'll be interesting to see if Detroit can replicate what they did a year ago. But anytime I'm getting a Nick Saban-trained defensive back, I feel pretty good about that. Darius Robinson, who was an absolute dude at Missouri, just kind of played on some kind of average teams much of his career. Kind of had the breakout year last year. He's headed to the Arizona Cardinals at 27. And Ricky Pearsall, this is so on brand for the Niners. Wide receiver out of Florida. He fits. And you think about what they have done, you know, with the passing game. Here's another guy. Another uber-efficient guy that is a precise route runner. And a guy that can make you some plays after the catch. I like the pick. And the fact that they're – it just, again, you look at what the Niners have done the last few years. And all of a sudden, they're just finding another offensive weapon. And speaking of weapons, there's Xavier Leggett, the final pick of the first round. He's the one that beat us at South Carolina. He did. He had been banged up a little bit. They'd had some other injuries at wide receiver, and this is a guy that really elevated his stock his final year at South Carolina. And now he's about to be a multimillionaire, and we saw it in person, right? I mean, right? We all saw this, the talent of this guy, big, physical, fleet-footed guy, really fits what everybody in the NFL wants in a wide receiver. And I guess proud for Shane Beamer and those guys, but yeah, not the least bit surprised. And it's so interesting to go back and talk about SEC players. But, guys, we played against all of them except for the kid from Florida. You know, so we know. We know how life works. But Yeah, again, expected to see some activity today. I mean, hey, we got some mock drafts out there that don't have Mississippi State players getting drafted at all. And maybe day two may be a bit optimistic, to be quite honest with you. I mean, we may just have some traffic on day three. And so I think that's important to understand. It's, again, we don't expect a great draft. We didn't expect any first rounders. I do think DeKim goes first, Buki second, and then it'll depend on team needs the rest of the way. But, you know, kickoff returns kind of being what they are, you feel like Tulu will get a chance somewhere. He has kind of a refined skill set when it comes to returns, as we all see. And we certainly wish the best to all of our Bulldogs. And Jaden Cromedy, a guy, too, that I think will be a value pick late. And we'll see what happens with Jet. But, again, not a deep draft for the Bulldogs, but we could hear some names called as early as today, but more than likely tomorrow. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Be sure and Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse. And when you do, their Facebook page will just auto-populate for you. And you can look at the pictures of all the amenities that are available to you there. What a great place to bring a large group to stay. Whether you're enjoying a ballgame weekend or just having a family event. Coming to Starkville, just kind of getting away. One of your favorite places. Bringing everybody under one roof. What could be better than that? Everybody has their own quarters. And then you've got, you know, the common areas you can kind of sit and work or just recreate. That huge back porch area, I cannot sell that enough. It is such a great, great place to just kind of sit and watch the day end. That fire pit area out there, too, you can sit around out there, and conversations around the fire are just better, aren't they? Right? Full service kitchen, so you can stock that place with groceries and cook all weekend. Get that wet bar, too. You know, so whether it's a guy's trip, a girl's trip, a couple's trip, or a family trip, or even a work trip, they can accommodate you. Now, when you Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse, you're going to have some booking options. You're going to have Airbnb. You're going to have VRBO. However, if you book through the Evolve website, I can save you 10% on your stay, which is, that's a freebie just for listening to the show. The promo code is BSR10. Gets you 10% off your stay when you book through the Evolve website. Be sure and check it out. Just 5 minutes from the Mississippi State campus, right? So you can kind of do all your tailgating there, right? You can just cook there. A lot less to just kind of carry back and forth, and you can enjoy the ball game and get back and just kind of recreate and watch those late night games with all your friends and family around you. What's better than that? Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Be sure and check them out. All right, baseball weekend. As you guys know, we had a couple games last night. I don't know if you guys have kept up with this, but things are not good in Oxford, which makes our loss to them sting even all the more, right? It just absolutely sucks that we lose that series. And again, we kind of made up some ground last week. But again, I think, where would we be? Where would we be if we had won that Saturday game? Probably ranked somewhere in the top 20. Be talking more about hosting. And as I said last night on the Dude Effect, if you hadn't watched that, you can. We did do a show last night too this week. Did one on Sunday after the sweep. And then, of course, our regular Thursday episode. But I'm just so happy that the conversation has shifted from, hey, these guys are going to stink, to, hey, can we possibly host? Yeah, possibly. It's a long shot, but we got to win some games. And again, we have four series to come. And three of them are against top 20 opponents. Now, last night's action, Alabama defeats Ole Miss 12-0 in seven innings. And again, as happy as you are to see those guys lose, it stinks, man, that we lost to them. It does. And it's going to take me a while to get over it. I'm just going to kind of say it for what it is. But that's one of those things we're going to wish we had back. But we knew the streak wouldn't last forever, and it didn't. But, yeah, really tough ball game last night for Ole Miss. Absolutely brutal, man. 12-0. And, of course, you know, you read the social media commentary, and people are like, look, we've got to make a change here. And I hear that change is coming. They'll probably just retire Mike Bianco. They gave him that big contract after he won an AFL championship. And say good for Mike, right? But, you know, looking back at this thing, you know, the thing that I take away from it, besides the fact that Ole Miss is not good at baseball, And Ole Miss really not good at sports. I mean, outside of football, I mean, I think it's pretty safe to say they are not good at sports. But, you know, we got Alabama coming in here next week. And Justin LeBron, 3 for 4 tonight. Will Hodo, a guy that we know well, 2 for 5 with 3 ribbies. And then Cade Snell, the designated hitter, also 3 for 4 with 3 ribbies. And the catcher, Matt Gusetti, we played against him last year. He goes 2 for 3 and drives in 3 runs. So, very offensive night for the Crimson Tide. They scored 12 runs on 16 hits in just 7 innings of play. Riley Maddox was the starter. He drops to 2-6. He worked just 3 1/3, allows 5 runs on 9 hits, struck out just 1, and also hit a batter. Austin Simmons, they keep trying to put him out there, and nothing happens here. Mitch Morrell, absolutely toasted last night by Alabama hitting. Works 2/3 of an inning, allows 7 runs on 5 hits. Did not strike out a batter. Also hit 2. And they bring in Ryan Rodriguez just to kind of mop up there. And he works 3 scoreless innings, allows just 2 hits. And so, hey, good work for Ryan there. But tough night at the ball yard for the Rebelettes. Let's take a look here at the Missouri-Tennessee game. Tennessee, that game goes to full 9. Tennessee wins 10-1. Tennessee now up to 3rd in the country. Were you aware of that? They kind of quietly are putting together another big year. Maybe not as dominant as they have been because they're not hitting all the home runs like they used to. But they gave up a ton of hits, though, and pitched them way out of some trouble. They gave up 9 hits in the ballgame but just allowed the 1 run. And Tennessee with 10 hits and 10 runs. And what's nuts about this, and I don't know if you've kept up with this, all of the runs scored in this game were all via the home run. That's for both teams. Yeah, let that sink in a second. So Tennessee homers in the first, gets a solo shot. They come back in the second and with a 3-run shot to make it a 4-0 ball game. Then Billy Amick homers to left. He's back. Solo shot makes it 5-0. Ensley homers in the fourth to make it 6-0. And then Amick comes back again. Big night for him. 3-run shot to make it 9-0. In the seventh, Missouri gets on the board with a solo home run to make it 9-1. And then in the eighth, Peebles with a solo shot to make it 10-1. So every single run in this game trots around the bases courtesy of a home run. That's absolutely ridiculous, man. How many times are you going to see that? Hey, if it's a 3-run ball game, yeah. But all 11 runs combined scored on a home run. That's pretty nuts. Chris Stamos opens for Tennessee, works 2 2/3 of an inning, allows 3 hits, 3 Ks, no runs. A.J. Causey gets the win in relief. He works 6 innings, 6 hits, and gives up the 1 solo shot, 6 strikeouts and 2 walks. And then Matthew Dallas closes it out, just 1/3 of an inning there. But, yeah, interesting night in Knoxville. And so Missouri and Tennessee will get together this evening at 5:30 Central, and Tennessee trying to take the series there. It's certainly like the fact that Tennessee's playing at home. They're really tough at home. Georgia, going to make the travel to Texas A&M. Georgia not been a great road team, and A&M played exceptionally well. They're number one in the country for a reason. I like A&M to take this series. They could possibly sweep the way they pitch it. And again, Georgia, really, really good at Foley Field, but we saw when they came here that they're a team, if you don't give them much, they don't get much. Florida is at Arkansas, and it's interesting. Somebody asked last night on the Dude Effect that some people are still forecasting Florida may have a chance to host. I haven't seen that this week. But, guys, there is no chance that Florida's going to host. Zero chance they're going to host. Have you looked at their schedule? I mean, truly, have you looked at the Florida Gators' schedule? And I'm going to pull it up for you so we can see it together in real time. This Florida team, again, a series that we should have won. You know, we all know this. We all know this. It's we got to move on from it. But listen, here's where Florida is. They are 21-19 with an 8-10 record in SEC play. 21-19, guys. Florida might not even have a winning record by the time the year is over. You say, Steve, that's a little bit much. They're 2 games over 500, and let's just run through what they have left. They're at Arkansas this weekend. Do you expect them to win that series in Fayetteville? I don't. Maybe they get one. But again, then you're just one game over 500. You get Florida Atlantic in the midweek. You ought to be able to get a dub there. And then you host Tennessee. Do you think Florida's going to beat Tennessee the way Tennessee's playing right now? It's going to be tough. Then you get South Florida in the midweek. Then you get Kentucky. SEC leading Kentucky. And then you close it out going to Georgia. What series are they going to win? Now, they may pick up a game or two and avoid being swept. But, guys, this Florida team, they're going to go to Hoover, and they could potentially have a losing record. So, no, they're not going to host. Anybody that's telling you that's not paying attention. It's true. Of course, Kentucky's at South Carolina. And, again, this is a big, big series for Kentucky because, again, we keep kind of waiting for Kentucky to come back to earth. And South Carolina has played some good baseball at times. They're ranked 24th. And again, as I told you guys on Monday, the fact that they're ranked and we're not, it's kind of silly to me. But I like Kentucky to take the series. I do think Carolina will get a game. And, of course, State's at Vanderbilt. You know my thoughts about that series. Auburn is at LSU. And Auburn just can't catch a break either. I mean, honestly, it's one of the most brutal schedules that I remember. And the league is not great this year. It's not great from a dominant standpoint. You say, well, Steve, we got the number one team in the country, got number three. Yeah, there's a lot of parity in the league this year, a lot of parity. And I think we're going to all beat each other up, and it may cost us some host spots in the end. But when you look at this Auburn schedule and you think, okay, Steve, they're 2-16. They're just kind of playing out the string. And I agree with you there. I absolutely agree with you. Auburn really has nothing left to play for other than pride and maybe trying to find a way to get to Hoover. And they're going to need some help to do that. But they're at LSU, which is always a tough place to play late in April and in May. It's tough. It is. Of course, LSU wins a series last week in Missouri. And then Auburn welcomes Ole Miss in. And you got to think, okay, maybe that's one that we can get. And then you got to go to Missouri. And Missouri's been a very difficult team at home. And then you finish up with Alabama. So the good thing is a couple of your toss-up series are at home. But again, when you look at this thing, can you honestly say you expect Auburn to win any of these series? Maybe Ole Miss, Missouri. But do you think Auburn could go on the road and beat Missouri? Probably your best chance is going to be the Ole Miss series. And Mike Bianco always seems to find some way to pull out something in May. He always seems to find a way to make it interesting. Alabama's at Ole Miss. Of course, Alabama now going for the series today. That'll be a later game. And, yeah, you certainly like Alabama to take the series. But the reality of it is every game matters now. And as I mentioned in the first segment of the show, the pitching matchups absolutely favor Mississippi State at Vanderbilt. Now, we have to take full advantage. We have our best guy going tonight against their number two, a guy that's given up 10 home runs in SEC play alone. You get the offense going tonight. I think Cal can hold them down. You win that one, and certainly the Saturday matchup favors them because their ace is going against TBD, and TBD is an enigma in and of himself. And then you go into Sunday, and they don't have much pitching left, as we discussed earlier in the show. You're already short a few arms, and if you have to spend some, you're probably going to have to throw some guys twice on a weekend. And then Gerangelo, if he gives us six, maybe seven innings, you certainly like your opportunity. So we have gone from the beginning of this schedule saying, hey, we just need to get one at Vanderbilt. And now I think we all feel like, hey, we're capable of taking this series, and we certainly are. And so I'm going to upload the show. I'm going to pack a bag. I'm going to head to Nashville, and we'll have full coverage all weekend long at jeanspage.com of the baseball weekend. And I expect at a minimum to get one, but at this point I'm kind of leaning towards two. If we can come out there and swing the bats a little bit, I think we get two games at Vanderbilt. And that would be so incredibly significant for this team. I thought we'd get two at A&M. And, of course, A&M surprised me. I think we have enough evidence about Vanderbilt now to kind of figure out they're pretty much our contemporary this year. And not to mention, when you begin to think about controversy, right? So one of their pitchers allegedly used an illegal substance last week, and they were caught. Now he's suspended for the week. And now, you know, Chris Simonis and his staff are going to be paying close attention, as will the officials. Greg Sankey is not one that smiles upon people embarrassing this league. And you better believe that the officials this weekend will be on high alert. And so that's the thing you begin to ask yourself, too. If you're Vanderbilt, and maybe this is a symptom of a bigger problem, which I believe that it is, do you take a weekend off? Do you say, you know what, we can't afford to get caught? Because could you begin to imagine if something happened again this week? If a Vandy pitcher was caught using an illegal substance this week? Yeah, so I think they'll probably play it safe, which I think plays into the hands of Mississippi State a little bit. When there's controversy, I don't want us to be anywhere around it. But in this situation, I think Vanderbilt mentally may see things a little bit differently. There's a lack of confidence, especially when you're a person that's cut corners and now all of a sudden people are watching you and you can't cheat. There's going to be doubt. There's a reason you cheat in the first place, right? It's because maybe you're looking for a competitive advantage. Well, now that's been removed. And so you begin to ask yourself, what will be the mindset of this staff, number one, going in, understanding that they're under the microscope, but also, two, a guy that you were counting on SEC weekends is now removed for this weekend. You're being punished. I think that's something to think about. Hey, guys, visit whenthebottomfalls.com, and you can get the new book, When the Bottom Falls. And, of course, all my sports titles are there. And we're 16 chapters into the new book. It looks like it's going to go 24, 25. Just kind of depends on a couple things. But we were talking about doing 20. And I just can't tell this story in 20 chapters. And so we're going to have to probably push this thing out to about 80,000 words. And, we'll see. We'll cut if we need to. But it's so much easier to kind of cut some extraneous stuff out than pump some meaningful stuff in. Because if it was meaningful, it would be in there in the first place. And so, this process has been a lot of fun for me. I know many of you are excited about pre-ordering a book. I'm told that's going to happen at some point next month. And then I hope to have the book released in August or September. And so we'll get all that together for you, and looking forward to you reading this and making you even prouder to be a Bulldog, right? Not just sharing information about Duty Noble, but really pride in our athletic programs before many of us were even alive. And as always, if you hadn't done so, go to truerest.com, and you can make the phone call to 662-268-7601. Speak to my lovely wife, and she can get you going. Whether you've got chronic pain, stress, anxiety, and we all do in some respects. Or maybe you just need some time to yourself to kind of regroup. We can help you with that. You can download the True Rest app and book online, or you can call 662-268-7601 to get more information or to just schedule a float. And we're running a 2-for-1 special right now in honor of Mother's Day. So you can get gift cards 2-for-1. Yeah, how about that? You've stressed your mom out enough. Let's give her some time to relax and rest. On your dime. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.